Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. This is Kyle Mason. I'm going to be your host today. I'm joined here today with, as always, the owner, CEO, man in charge, my brother, Kevin Mason. And I've got Brett Davis, our gun shop manager here. And we're going to have another week of talking about guns, gear, outdoors, concealed carry, all the stuff that us good God-loving Americans love to do. We kind of ended last show barely getting into you guys going to SHOT Show. We talked about Kevin skateboarding the Mini Cooper across the curb, how they look like a couple driving around Vegas in there.
That will come up again this episode, too.
That will? I'm looking forward to it.
That's the highlight of Vegas at this moment.
Yeah.
So better than all the guns, you two riding around seeing Hoover Dam and the Mini Cooper was the way to go.
Brett looking like a gorilla in a micro machine, yes.
Yeah. Mm. All right.
You were there too. Just remember.
I know. I'm sure I look great.
All right. So to recap, you guys get into Vegas late. Flights were canceled. There's only two seats on the plane. Get in late. You get this. Supposed to have a Nissan Sentra. End up with a Mini Cooper. Hilarity ensues as you guys are driving around town from Airbnb to the show. So when you finally get to the show, I know you talked about it is huge. There's so much to take in. It's kind of overwhelming at first. So what do you really experience when you first, where is it?
Okay. So it was at the Caesar Palace and Venetian
Expo Center.
Yeah, Venetian Expo Center. We got there. We have not registered yet because this was a spur of the moment deal. Cause as Kevin said yesterday, the trip was canceled and we didn't do our due diligence and get registered and get everything, tickets, all that stuff. When we get there, the first step is to try to find where you're going. Not an easy task. I mean, it's five stories in the Venetian, what, two stories in the Caesar?
Yeah, so it's across a walkway, across the road is two other stories.
So this isn't one big, like, Bartle Hall Expo Center. This is multiple floors, multiple buildings.
It's multiple show? Centers, yeah, it's multiple Bartle Halls for sure. It's big.
Oh wow! And do you, like, how many vendors would you say they had there? Like 1,000 or
I think they said 2,500 vendors there, and it was 14 or 15 miles of aisle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not shitting you at all. We talked about not being in shape, but even Julie, our legs hurt so bad at the end of the first day, just because you walk and walk and walk.
So. For the average person, it's like, hey, I'm going to fly to Vegas. I'm going to go to SHOT Show for a day and come back. There's no way they're doing it.
You ain't seeing everything in a day. We didn't see everything in 2 days.
We didn't know why it takes 5 days to do this show. And I mean, it takes 5 days. It's a lot.
But a lot of it seems like I said, this is our first time going and Brett's first time too. And he's been in the gun business longer mm-hmm. than I have as far as gun shop stuff. We went with a purpose for the holster company. Like I said, the holster company is direct-to-consumer focused. It feels to me, and Brett can chime in, to me it's more of a SHOT Show is more beneficial to people that are, for a holster company anyways, if you were trying to sell to these gun shops mm-hmm. or sell other stuff. Like, we stopped and talked to some guys that did bags and different stuff like that for our gun shop. But that wasn't the main reason we were there.
Yeah. Distributors. I mean, if we want to sell our product to distributors, that's where you want to go, for sure.
Okay. And so you get there. I'm sure there's some sort of map. So you're like, hey, I want to go check out the Canic booth, or I want to go check out SIG. Or
well, it's not a map. It's a book.
Okay.
And it's literally a whole book.
Yeah, it's a book. You get it when you register. You get a book of every vendor is in one book, and then the next book is a map of each page is a map of each.
Now, do they somewhat try and group them like all the gun companies together? Or do they just kind of shotgun them out? And
no, so
wherever they are.
That's what we thought. We thought, okay, if we get to floor number whatever, two or whatever, that's where the Canics and Walters and SIG and Smith and Wesson. No, because the first floor we went to didn't have a gun manufacturer in it at all. Yeah. It was like apparel stuff, a ton of AR parts. I mean, there's, you know how many parts on the market that people make for ARs just because of how modular they are. it was a ton of that. So we thought, okay, we'll get to the next floor and it'll be what we're looking for. Not necessarily.
So does it have like a vibe of like, I don't want to call it like big city gun show, but like major distributors, and then like on the other hand, like the local gun shop with the guys trying to sell all their stuff too? Is it everybody there? Is it like major players mainly?
It's everybody. And I think what surprised me more than anything was there was a lot of, I don't know what the best way to put it is, not even, they were in the market or industry maybe from manufacturing. But here's a prime example of what I'm talking about. We go through and we're taking pictures and stuff, you know, obviously. We get to this booth. They have this cool rifle, this thing set up. We're not taking any pictures. The guy's like, oh, freaking out on us about taking pictures. Well, what it is all these people come from overseas or wherever. They manufacture something for the gun industry. They're trying to take pictures. And I don't know if they have an app on their phone that somehow is measuring or something with their phone. They can recreate this stuff.
Okay, so it's almost like a 3D scanner on their phone, and they're like...
Something.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
That was probably bizarre. Half of the show, to be honest.
I'm surprised they would put it out, or they wouldn't have it like behind some deal, or...
And that's what we're thinking. We're like, well, what's the point of the SHOT Show if you can't show stuff?
Right.
Which, I don't know, it's weird.
They've been making ARs forever, and they're all, you know, more or less the same. You know, the specs are close on most of them. Most of the parts are interchangeable.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it came down to, like, they're taking pictures of, like, guns, like the handguns, and going all around and taking video of it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Where they can make a off version of it.
Yeah, they're scanning it then.
Or
yeah,
whatever. Sure. But it was with everything.
Optics were a big one.
Yeah, optics were the biggest one, because most of those optics come from overseas anyways. There's very few that are from over here directly. So if one's popular, they're trying to figure out how to knock it off to get to the next one.
And that's where the Airsoft EOTechs and Trigicons and all those come from eBay, because they're scanning them. They're throwing a $3 lens instead of, you know, precision parallax lens in there and then just ripping them off.
Yep.
Okay. So what booth or booths would you guys say you know, did the best, or like what was your favorite part or like booth on the show that you really enjoyed?
As far as us, I think it was so overwhelming that I never really focused in on one super booth. Did you?
There was a few of them that were interactive. I really liked those booths. Like, you could go in and use an optic, look down at a closed room for thermal. They would shut the doors, let you actually use the product like it was meant to be used. There were some other interactive booths, like one, I forgot what brand it was. It was a pretty big company, but they had like a poker table. And if you go play a hand of poker, if you won, you got a chip, you get a free t-shirt. I mean, like there was a lot of that stuff, but it was so busy. I mean, you'd have to stand there for hours to go through those booths. But that was cool. The one that stuck out to me the most, probably the companies that have multiple, like a U.S. company and a foreign company, like HK CZ. Or CZ, how different those two companies are, and they just do not work together.
Really? So even, it's not like Toyota, you get a Toyota here, there?
No, it's you walk into the booth, and they just don't even mingle in the booth. Like, when you're talking to each other, they're separate. Like, if you ask them a question about a U.S. gun or product that we want to talk to them about, nope, we have to get you somebody else. It's just, that was shocking.
So like CZ, like the Shadows, are like those made here in Kansas City and then something else is made there? Do they make them both places, or do we even know?
We don't know.
Okay.
Now, right now, it's funny. We had a customer in recently in the gun shop that used to work for CZ here in Kansas City, said they're shutting down this location and moving it all to Colt. The truth of that, I don't know. Obviously, there's nothing on concrete evidence on that, but it's the same thing, just two different companies not working together. And then what do you do?
Right.
So you're just kind of stuck at their mercy right now.
Well, I'm talking about the CZ booth while we're there. So at the CZ booth, the main gun we're looking at is the new CZ, the Shadow 2 Compact. Mm-hmm. It's the newest CZ that's out. The guy that we were talking was from the Czech side, maybe? Yep. So anyways, he's super nice dude. He's talking, and I was like, okay, well, what can you tell me about the pistol? And he goes, well, it's not really a competition pistol, but it's not a concealed carry pistol. And I'm like, well, for us, people are going to concealed carry that.
Oh, for sure. Well, people, like, just to interject, people concealed carry SW57 that's a foot long, you know.
Yeah, well, he was talking because of the double single action on it.
Okay.
How the action of that pistol works. Over there, they wouldn't consider that a carry pistol. But in this market, everybody's going to carry it. Or some people made a good point, too. If you're in like a, whatever, the competition three-gun stuff, they have all the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
So that may not be a, I don't know all the different classes, but it would step you down and you could use that pistol in like a Glock 19 category.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so for layman's terms, it's like the demolition derby. They got modified, semi-modified.
Yes, welds. Different, like, classes, oh, okay, of what you can run it in, which makes sense to me. I mean, for me, that Shadow wouldn't be something I would carry anyways, just because of the sheer weight of it.
Right.
Not even necessarily the size, but just the weight. But that's to each their own. Like you said, we sell appendix holsters for the biggest guns they make, and people carry an appendix. So who am I to say that?
But. Yeah, and I guess there's something to say. If the best gun to carry, in my opinion, is the one you're comfortable with and that you've trained with. So I can see why somebody, you know, has their pistol that they like. You know, it may not be the most comfortable. It may not be the best to conceal. You know, so that's probably why you get a lot of it. But on the same point in time, there's probably better options, you know, that they could.
And that's the good thing about the market. And like, if you go to SHOT Show, you can see, like, even some of the booths we went to of, what would you say, not mainstream gun companies,
mm-hmm,
have some very good guns out there. But a lot of them are close to something else. You know, not necessarily a knockoff, but another version of something that's already on there.
Glock is a big one. There's a lot of separate companies that perfect the Glock. And
yeah, so the Glock 3 patents are out, so that's why you see Glock 3's redone into Shadow Systems, the Dagger from Palmetto State, all of those, because they can do whatever they want with it at this point.
Which is a great interjection and kind of sidestepping, and we'll get back to it, but something that I feel that we do really well that a lot of other companies don't is we make molds for the Shadow Systems, because we tried the Glocks. That's what everybody does. They don't fit right. So yeah,
they're close, but they're not right.
Okay. So checked out CZ. I thought I saw some pictures of a new Canic that came out. What were you guys' thoughts on the new Canics? Are they the TTI Combats? Is that what they are?
Or? Yeah, it was the... It's more or less a compensated version of what they already have.
Yeah,
it's like and fancied up with some Terran Tactical, which Terran Tactical does a lot of Magwell, different stuff. It's a fancied up one. And I would say out of not just Canic, all the booths as far as pistols go, which is what we were there to do, by far and wide, that's what we were trying to concentrate on. There was very few new pistols, but with that said, over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a ton of new pistols coming out. But what the trend was, no different than that Canic where they just put a compensator on it, the FN booth said the same thing. Well, we got this gun, but with a compensator on it. It was all of them doing that same type of stuff.
Okay, so I've never shot a pistol with a compensator on it. For somebody that's at home listening, what would be the benefit of having that compensator? Is it less recoil? Is it less muzzle flash?
It depends on what you're talking. If you're talking about a concealed carry pistol, I don't think it makes as much difference.
Okay.
In all honesty, do you, Brett?
Muzzle rise.
Yeah, I mean, muzzle rise and stuff will change some.
Target picture doesn't move as much, so it's quicker on target.
They really started for the competition guns is what they started for, and then they started making these micro nines, so they put it on there to make the gun a little less snappy. They're still, when you go to a 18 or 20 ounce gun, it's still going to be snappy with a compensator on it. You know, there's no fixing that. It's a weight thing. So to me, for a concealed carry version, it doesn't trip my trigger too much, so to speak, as far as what I would want. But a lot of people seem to want that, so.
I've noticed they're pretty loud.
Yeah, they are loud.
I mean, I will notice. I will give you that. It's loud.
So it kind of almost directs some of the sound up instead of all forward.
Yeah, instead of forward, it's coming up or out.
Okay. So are there anything that was, like, underwhelming to you? Like, any new products that you're like, man, that wasn't the best, or I'd hoped for better, or was there?
I would say the amount of pistols that we saw new pistols. I think
so.
And I was expecting more new product.
And I know we kind of talked about it the other day with Watchtower Firearms that was out there with Rob O'Neill that we've done some advertising with. They've got, it's the 2011s, like they're Apache, like we were talking about. Is that kind of the trend? Is everybody going like 2011s now? Because I know you got like the Prodigies out.
2011s are huge. I mean, as far as a 1911 platform, a single stack, I won't say they're outdated because, I mean, people are always going to carry the 7-round, 8-round 1911s, but it's a modern version of them. They shoot amazing. Even the Prodigy shoots amazing. But
you're getting a double stack polymer gun. And you're getting the quality and fit and finish of a 1911.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're doing. They're higher end guns, no different than Staccatos.
Mm-hmm.
You get what you pay for to some extent on that. With that said, for us in the holster market, you don't tend to do as many holsters for them because no different than I have a Staccato from the YouTube stuff. We use it in the holster shop some. It's not one that sits out there because it's a $3,000 gun.
Right.
But I don't feel like carrying that gun. You know, it's.
Yeah, and
I would agree.
And I have that conversation with a lot of people when it comes to like deer rifles and stuff. Like our dad carried the wooden deer rifle for years and he was, don't scratch it. Don't touch it. Like you better not put it on the ground. You know, you climb the fence, and, you know, whatever.
If you can't hit them with a $500 pistol, the $2,500 pistol ain't going to help you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So for me, like, and maybe it's just because I'm cheap or, you know, I've never shot a $2,500 pistol, but, you know, I like my XDS or I've got a 1911. And if I'm shooting, I like shooting my 1911 because I feel like I can hit.
We'll just keep you jaded on that so you don't try to take our expensive guns in.
Yeah.
There's a difference, but in concealed carry, close quarter stuff, it's going to be negative.
Yeah,
next to nothing as far as reality.
No, for sure.
Yeah, and I was watching a deal on History Channel, and a lot of people have probably seen it, but they were talking about like snipers and their tactics and things like that, and they had this sniper instructor on there, and he runs a shooting school out in Arizona for long-range shooting, and he said the most common question he gets is, what's the most accurate rifle I can buy before I come to class? And this guy said, I tell all the students the same thing. You can go buy any deer rifle off the shelf at Walmart, and it is going to be more accurate than you can shoot until you train 100%. Hours and hours. And, you know, these long-range rifles, these guys are shooting thousands of rounds a week in different weather conditions, humidity, temperatures, all this stuff, you know, to be able to shoot 800,000, 1,200 yards, whatever it is.
And that's to that point on rifles. So long-range shooting is a whole different thing than, like, a deer rifle or coyote hunting, you know. Well, in handguns, the trend, unfortunately, and that's another reason why we always are promoting people to go train and go, you know, at the end of every YouTube video, it's keep practicing and always be prepared. Because go shoot. Like, if you only shoot that gun, I don't care if you're talking a pistol or a rifle, once a year, you're not going to be proficient with it. I don't care if you were a military guy and 20 years ago shot all the time, it's a muscle memory thing. You got to practice to some extent, which, you know, ammo's expensive. I get it, but you're not doing yourself a justice if you buy that pistol and never go train with it.
Well, and think about it, there's a lot of guys that used to throw darts or bowl in league or play softball or like it's all muscle memory and, you know, you got to stay conditioned. You know, I used to be able to shoot free throws lights out, but I go try and shoot 10 right now and make 4 of them.
Yeah, that's like saying, well, when I was 15, I was the fastest kid, so I'm the fastest kid now. Well, not so much.
I don't know. Maybe if you ran against 15-year-olds, well, I don't know. Those kids would probably smoke you right now. Yeah, I used to think I was in good shape still, and when I was still down at Pure Air, we'd go play sand volleyball. And I used to be fairly athletic. I'm like, oh, I'm going to smoke these kids. And dude, there's 20-year-old dudes there that aren't as athletic as I used to be, and they would dominate you. And especially, like, you try and do sand volleyball or something, you run 3 times and you're done.
Yeah.
The one booth I will say, though, before I lose my track on it, that I was happy to see and the owners were super cool on and were excited to get one of the pistols is the Rost Martin.
Now, who owns that?
Oh,
I had to put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot. I got his card on my desk. He's a super nice guy. Him and his wife own it. They're out of Dallas, Texas. American-made pistols. It's kind of like a Glock clone in some type of ways, but it's going to be a $400 pistol, and it feels really good. Mm-hmm. The trigger, it's hard to say just dry firing it without shooting it a lot. I think it's got potential for sure. And just being a U.S. company and the owners being cool is hard not to root for them.
Well, and how they can keep that $400 price point, I mean, that's a good selling point right there, because there's, you know, tons of people that don't have $600, $700, $800 to go spend on a pistol.
Yeah, and even if they do, they don't want to. And that's why I tell people all the time that come in the gun shop when you start talking about the training thing too. If you do have $800, don't spend the whole $800 on the gun and not buy enough ammo to go shoot it.
Right.
I mean, it don't matter what you buy. You ain't going to be good with it if you don't shoot it.
Well, and, you know, not to toot our own horn, but same thing for your holster when you're going to concealed carry. You know, there's some holsters that are cheap, and there's a reason that they're cheap and they don't fit as well. And, you know, and, you know, from my armed security background, you want your firearm to be secure to you, because you don't know, you may be rolling around, you may, you know, fall getting out of your car. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is.
And that's the problem with, and holsters are the same way, is people go, well, say Brett likes this gun, so his buddy goes buys that gun. Well, it may not work for you. Not, there's not one gun that's perfect for everybody, no different than holsters. So it'd be like Brett saying, oh, I wear this holster, and you going, well, I wear this one. And you're me going off of what you guys say and not trying my own stuff.
The best question I get every day is, what gun fits best? The one that fits you. I mean, I can't tell you what's going to fit you. And please, don't come in and buy a gun for your wife.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it happens all the time.
Bring your wife with you.
They want the pink sparkly?
Don't matter about the color. Make sure it fits them, because what fits you as a husband does not mean it's going to fit your wife.
And the trend for that, too, is most new gun owners, this isn't just women, this is the guys, too, come in and they want a concealed carry pistol.
Mm-hmm.
They will go pick the smallest thing there. Okay, that's great to conceal, but it's not the greatest to shoot. So if you're not proficient with it, it doesn't matter. So there's a fine line into all of that that a lot of people don't fully think out when they're buying a pistol, and then don't understand why they can't shoot it good.
Yeah, it's funny that you brought that up, because my brother-in-law, Jake, I came over to his shop yesterday asking about that Glock 26, because that's what he's looking at. And, you know, we've got a 26, we've got a 43, and he's a Glock fan. He's got a 17 right now, and I was like, look, we got the 26s, but I don't like them. The last time I shot one, my fingers wrapped around the bottom, the barrel short. I didn't feel like I could hit anything with it. I was like, you know, before you buy one, you know, at least come up to the shop, look at some, feel them in your hand. So, you know, it's just kind of weird that, you know, we're talking about that. And I literally have that message on my phone from this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. And it's just, that's a good thing about this podcast and YouTube and just everything is pushing knowledge to these people, especially after COVID. The amount of people, even Platte City, that we've known all of our life, that were people that we would like, those people are never going to buy a gun.
Oh, for sure.
We're in there going, I want a 9mm, and that was the only thing they cared about.
Just a 9. They didn't care what brand.
And the only reason is because somebody told them, well, get a 9mm.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Like, I'm all about gun rights and stuff, but don't put yourself in that situation. Go get the training with
training,
it.
Training, for sure.
Now, it does seem that 9 is by far and away the most popular caliber, 380. Like, it doesn't seem like many people are carrying 40s anymore. Is 40 kind of gone?
Around here, I can speak for this. I can't speak for all over the country, but around here, technology has caught up with 40 from 9. 9 plus P Hornady round is what most police departments are carrying now. The technology is just there. It's just better ballistics.
Better ammunition.
Yep. Okay. So kind of like 5.56 versus 2.23, get a little bit more pressure pop. Yeah. Is that
For the police departments, they carried 40s forever because it was a step down from a 45, but they got a few more rounds. But then, like, most police departments are carrying Glocks. So take a Glock 19, which is a 9mm version. They're carrying Glock 23s, which is the 40s. Well, you could only get 13 rounds, isn't it? 13 rounds compared to 15, or it's a round capacity difference.
Okay.
So when one department would switch, they would all switch. So, like, say if they were somewhere in a bad situation, they all have Glock 9mm, they can all use the same mags.
Makes sense.
Is what it really goes down to. And other officers.
So I know, like, our grandpa, like, back in the day, his service revolver was a 38 special. Like, So was there a transition from 38 to 40 at some point in time, or like was 45 everything and they went down because it seemed like they're trying to be too lethal with the 45, and is that why they stepped down to a 40? Or do
not that I know of. I know there's departments all across the country that they get to do use what they want to use, but it went from 38s to 40. Biggest reason was round count, cost of ammo. Cost of ammo is still another reason why they went from 40 to 9, and 40 is not as easy to find anymore. There's just reasons, economical and comfort. You know, shooting, the ballistics is better, getting better on 9mm, and they keep going back and forth. There are departments that have switched from 40 to 9 and then back. It's just kind of a weird transition right now. I think
45 was never fully in with the police departments because of, and back in the old days, not so much, but nowadays there's a lot of women police officers. A woman trying to control a 45 and that size gun is going to be hard.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing where I don't, you know, working here, I don't even have a concealed holster for my 1911 because the thing weighs, it's so big, you know, and you got mm-hmm. those big bullets in the mag. I wear an outside on it, and I wear it, you know, on the side-by-side riding around the farm doing stuff like that. So I can see where that would be way less appealing to have those big, heavy rounds you're trying to carry sure. around. Now, on the police departments and the nines, you know, we've got those pistol carbines in there. Are a lot of them going away from 5.56 and running more pistol carbines in their car where they can, you know, use same mags, or they...
Not that I've seen yet, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. They have 223 most likely for distance, you know, not necessarily close in quarters. They're not using rifles most likely if they're going through a house, breaching a house, okay. most likely, unless it's like a SWAT team. But
and a lot of that will go by areas. What happens here in Kansas City will be different than wherever.
Yeah, and I mean, the guys driving around Weston, you know, they're going to get bigger, wider open areas. Well, but I mean, even in town, too, you know, you mm-hmm. don't know. Like, you can get into a Walmart or, you know, a big, you know, warehouse type deal, and you need the range, you know, if you got an active shooter situation.
Yeah, I know departments will have full auto in some areas. Some will have just semi-auto. They'll have suppressed. It just really depends on the department.
Yeah, I know our buddy Brett, when he was a motorcycle officer, they had ARs, and they had them all SBR'd with suppressors, and they had them on the saddlebags mm-hmm. on their bikes when they'd ride around. But I didn't realize police departments had to go through all the same ATF stuff for SBRs that
they don't.
Know, they don't?
Nope. They
okay.
They can buy off of the head letter, you know what I mean, for like the heading of police departments. They can buy off that and just have it shipped directly to them.
Okay.
Yeah, there are different rules. They can't just sell them like anybody else. Everybody still has to go through that process. But yeah, police departments have it a little easier, but I mean, they should. Most of them are government, so.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool because I would have never thought them putting one in the saddlebag, but you know, I guess there's, you know, a spot for everything there.
And walking around the SHOT Show, we saw a lot of that stuff. Like a lot of the ARs were into pistol stuff. Daniel Defense booth had a ton of AR pistols in it.
Yeah.
Daniel Defense had that H9,
yeah.
Which is going to be a cool pistol coming out. Pretty excited to shoot that. It's kind of like a 1911 platform, but with a polymer frame.
Was it polymer?
I think they said the reliability of a striker-fired gun.
Oh, okay. Yeah, AR pistols are definitely making a comeback with the ATF stuff going on.
Yeah, the other one, like we were talking about, is those Ruger Chargers. Like, they're selling as pistols, but they're clearly designed with the rail system on the back to accept a brace or whatever they're calling it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not real big fans of that, but...
So, is there any more talk on that? Is that kind of going back and forth still, or, you know, just kind of wait and see?
As far as I know, it's just ATF had the option to appeal, but the rumor I heard is it wouldn't do them a whole lot of good because the appeal court was one of the reasons they won. You know, got thrown out in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah, so on the, I just pulled up the H9. It says striker fired meets 1911. So it's like a 1911 platform, but in a striker fired gun. The one thing, it felt great, I thought, in my hand. The trigger is a little different. So the trigger safety hinges from the bottom instead of the top.
Mm-hmm.
So it just had a different feel to it. I won't say that's bad because I haven't shot it yet, but it feels different than the rest of your guns. I'll put it that way.
It does feel good in your hand. It's smooth. The grip on it's non-aggressive.
We'll just have to see how fast those actually come out, because the guy at the Daniel Defense booth, we were talking to the marketing guy about just getting one in for testing purposes to have for a couple weeks to do all of our scans with and send back. And he goes, well, they're telling employees right now it's going to be 2 years before employees can even get one. Remember the guy saying that? So I don't know. That's what sucks sometimes about like SHOT Show stuff. You may see something, like everybody sees us, even we posted a picture of the H9 on there.
Yeah.
And people are calling me even before we got back to Vegas. Hey, can I get one of those? Well, hell, it may be 6 months or a year before we get one.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that's like, they're like, oh, hell, SHOT Show's here. We have to have something to show. So this is kind of what we're working on.
In some ways, to be honest with you, we're kind of disappointed without the new guns coming out at SHOT Show. But I feel like some of these guns have been coming out at other times of the year. So no different than that Walther PD380, which I'm not a super fan of. You guys can go to YouTube and watch that. But it came out back in October.
Yeah.
So they were showing it at the SHOT Show. I think it's better for the industry to they come out with stuff as it's ready to come out, instead of either hurry up and get it ready for SHOT Show, or have something that could be good to the market and then have to hold it until SHOT Show, which I think is what kind of happened in the past when they released 20 new guns all at SHOT Show.
Yeah, I mean, Ruger released those LC carbines and 45 ACP. Haven't seen any of those yet.
Yeah.
Smith & Wesson lever actions. Haven't seen any of those yet. I mean, there's some releases that come out that are really cool, and I can't wait to get my hands on them. But, I mean, and when I say get my hands on them, I don't mean just hold them. I mean, like SHOT Show, you can hold everything. You can't shoot it. I mean, I can hold a gun all day long, but that does not mean I'm going to like it. So once I shoot it, I can make a better, judgment on that gun. But so that's kind of what I'm waiting for right now, is the gun shop side. And for everybody waiting, we're waiting with you. So,
yeah, and that's the frustrating part for everybody, and just how marketing works around the SHOT Show is it's, everybody coming together to work together in the industry is a great thing. But then the customer side gets used to certain things and then want it now, and that's not how it's working, unfortunately. In the perfect world, when the H9 came out, they'd be ready to send it to every gun shop or whatever, but who knows what stage it's really in. Maybe it's not quite ready to ship yet, or maybe it is. Nobody knows.
Now, is it getting better with availability across the board? Like, I know during COVID, we were talking last episode, hey, we were bringing in personal guns, so we had something to put on the shelf. Are guns getting back to where the production's starting to catch up, across the board?
It's going in waves. So, one time, ammo is really hard to get. Primers were hard to get. Right now, ammo is coming back. Primers are still hard to get, but I've heard powder is almost nowhere to be found. It's just coming in waves. And then rifle, shotguns, pistols, exact same reason. SIG right now, for some reason, are just very hard gun to get right now. They were great all through COVID. And then now, they're just almost impossible to find. And there's no reason for it other than probably production. They didn't plan for it or something going like that. I don't know. I can't speak for that. But, that's what's going on right now. It's just waves.
The funny part of one thing I was kind of shocked about at SHOT Show, and I just thought of it because he said Sig Sauer was not there.
Not at all.
Not at all. We went through and I'm like, okay, we missed them somewhere. So we asked one of our distributors from the gun shop side. He goes, oh, they haven't been coming for, what did he say, 2 or 3 years?
2 or 3 years, yeah.
Did they say why? Is there a reason? Or
only thing I can think is, like we talked about, it's a industry gun. So like SIGs, whether they go to SHOT Show or not, a gun shop's customer is going to ask for those mm-hmm. guns. So it's not like they need to go sell to these gun shops. The customers, no different in our gun shop, the customers really drive what we're going to buy, because you got to have what the customers want.
So you're basically saying that, because I don't know if you've known, because this is our first time, we didn't realize how big some of these booths really get. I mean, they spend hundreds of thousands on these booths.
Guaranteed. So I saw a deal when you guys were going, Did they have the Texas-sized deer blind that's as big as my house up on the lakes? Was that in SHOT Show?
Not this year. We didn't see it in person. I didn't see it in person. We've seen pictures of that. But that's the type of booths they have. They have, some are three stories tall. And the third story is nothing for but salesmen to meet up there and do business, you know. There's just a lot of different things going on in there. SIG knows they're going to sell guns no matter what. So they're cutting out their $250,000 expense and they're not going to get hurt whatsoever.
Yeah, because the big booths, Smith & Wesson and them, had 20 or 30 high-end employees in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, suit and tie employee guys in there.
Oh, so it's not
the guy answering the phone. So you take their salary for the week. You take
the hotels,
the meals, the booth itself. I mean, yeah, it's easy $250,000.
Probably a week to 2 weeks to set up and week to 2 weeks to tear down. I mean, on some of these booths,
they're shipping their booths back and forth, all that.
Now, does that eliminate like a lot of the mom and pop companies from even being able to do it? Is there like a cheaper booth?
There's booths all the way down to like what you would see at like a
probably a 10x10 booth.
Like you would see with a table and flyer and stuff on it. The issue for that is like what me and Brett talked about while we were coming home, is us as a holster company going out there, being as we're direct to consumer more than we are to dealers. I don't know, even if you spent 10 grand on a booth, which it'd be more than that, by the time you get it out there, people to work, stay the show, I don't see the benefit to it for us. And I think that's where a lot of the small companies run into, is unless you're driven to do that, but a lot of these gun shops want 40% off. So how are you going to be driven to do that and take 40% off, you know? Our pricing structure just doesn't do that. Whereas a holster company that would sell our holsters for, you know, $100 that we sell for $60 to the customer, which is long-term screwing the customer, they have that market because then they sell them for $60 to the dealers.
Right.
You know, so we just don't get into that dynamic of that. So for us, a booth would not be beneficial at all.
Well, and for us, I mean, same reason, like, you know, people are probably curious about, well, I ordered this holster, why is there a 4 to 5 day, you know, lead time? Because we make every order for that customer. We don't sit there and stock, you know, 10,000 Glock 19 holsters. Like, we'd never be able to hire enough guys, number one, to make every holster out there with all the combinations, color patterns. And that's something we haven't talked about, that, you know, I think it's really cool that we do, by sublimating our Kydex ourselves, we're able to offer these patterns and come up with stuff and do specialty prints for people that, you know, other companies may not have, and, you know, trying to stay on the cutting edge of, you know, what people want, what's, you know, not out there. But when you start getting into the, even if you just had, you know, the, you know, three or four carbon fiber colors, you'd never be able to stock enough. So for us to have a booth, it'd be counterproductive, because 95% of what we took there wouldn't sell, because it wouldn't be the right orientation, the right clip, the right belt loops.
And gun shops are the same way. I mean, us having a gun shop literally four steps behind or in front of our holster shop, you'd think we'd be able to stock everything. We could have 200 holsters in there and we'd never hit what people want. And that's us owning a holster company and a gun shop. So for a normal gun shop that's ordering from us or any other holster company, the chances of them ever having what the customer wants anyways are slim to none, because they'll come in even at our shop and they'll have a black one there of a whatever, Glock 19, say.
Yeah.
Well, I want the black carbon fiber one, or I want this clip on it. It's always something different, which is great because we offer options where people can customize it to them. But from a wholesale shop side,
That's why our new holsters that we've been switching to
help a lot,
really helping with that, because they're cut for optic all the time now. They have all of our clip options available. Sorry.
Yeah, so Kyle, before you came, which you already know this, but our holsters were either molded for the standard clip or the monoblock or the tuckable, not both of them. Well, now we mold them for both of them. That way the customer can do whatever they want.
With adjustable cant built into all of them.
Yeah, because some people order the standard clip thinking that's what they want, and it ends up not. Well, then they'd either have to stick with a holster they don't really like or exchange it or whatever. Well, now they can use a Ulti clip one day if they're not going to wear a belt, switch it to a tuckable clip, switch it to a monoblock. They have versatility to do what they want now, where we're not locking them into, oh, now you have to buy another holster.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And, you know, kind of talking about the gun shops and the stuff that you will find stocked is I've seen, like, and of course, you know, my phone's always listening, so I get ads for holster companies all the time. And I know they're doing it to try and, you know, lessen the amount of molds and they can pre-stock stuff, but they try and make everything ambidextrous. So you flip your clips from one side or the other. Well, those are never going to fit as good. That's something that's designed to be worn on the right side or the left, you know?
Yeah, they're bulky. It's going to add, you know, width to every holster when you do that.
And we've had people ask to do that. We've just always not done it because no matter what you do in that form, not even us, any other holster company, it's a halfway good one way, halfway good the other way holster. You're never going to get 100% good inside holster that's also 100% good outside holster. There's not such a thing. So, but they do it because we know how much molds cost. We make our own molds now.
And how much room molds take up. People don't realize we've got a library of molds and, you know,
we're not even a quarter of the way through and we got a library of them.
So, yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, and just for the people at home, you know, you've got one gun. Okay, so now you've got left and right, so that's two. Now you've got, and that's for the inside. Now you've got a paddle version. So
left,
now you're
left and right.
Left and right, so now you're up to four. Then you've got a mock series. Now you're up to six.
Then you got the outside.
Then you got outside. Now you're up to eight. So that's eight molds for one gun without a light.
By the time you do lights, you're about 50.
So for every light, yeah, you're doubling it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you take what there's, just say 200 popular handguns times 50. You're at, what, 10,000 molds in a hurry?
Mm-hmm. You better get to work, Kyle. That's all I'm saying.
Just the blocks. I mean, we're making them out of just, you know, straight blocks. The blocks are $20, $30, $40 a piece. There's almost $60 a piece for the outside blocks.
Right. And the other thing people don't realize is, and, you know, kind of being new to CNC, it was a learning curve for sure. But you can have a $60,000 Haas machine or you can have a $10,000, you know, hobby level, let's just call it, CNC machine. And you can only cut so fast. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're cutting metal, that $60,000 machine will do it better because it's a stronger motor.
You need more spindles. You
need more spindles, which is why we have 100 grand in CNC machines running all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And machine time's the killer. And that's why, you know, the modeling's not bad. So, you know, I know I hear phone calls come in and, well, why is it 2 weeks on a light? Well, I have to model it, which will take me, you know, it's not bad, you know, a couple hours to make the mold right. Then we have to go cut it, which takes a couple hours. Then we test it, make sure. And, you know, by the time you're the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth light combination in line, you know, you're 4 days out. And then, you know, we got to make it, make sure it fits right, you know, fold it, test it to your gun, and make sure it's right when you get it. So it's not like a standard, you know, Glock 17 that we've made 10,000 of already.
No, and that's the misconception of the holsters is they think, oh, you just throw a light on it and mold it. They don't realize all the other stuff that goes into making sure it fits, making sure it goes in the holster. You know, you'll get people sometimes that go, well, on the light bearing holster, well, the top's open some. Well, yeah, the widest part of your light has to go through the top of the holster too.
Yeah, the way I try and explain it, you know, you start at the muzzle of the pistol, and then you work your way all the way back to the striker. And wherever it's fat on the front, there's got to be a channel all the way down for that to slide in. So that's where you get retention issues and, you know, especially you talk about blue guns and taping them up. You tell me how you're going to realistically and consistently tape up light-bearing holsters on a blue gun because that channel's not going to be right. I guarantee you it's going to drag.
Some of the blue guns don't even have the rails on there to put lights on. So
yeah, I mean, the blue guns are inconsistent by themselves, but then you put a light on a blue gun, it's 10 times worse.
And even having the models and, you know, measuring with micrometers and knowing, you know, what tolerances we need on them. You know, there's still adjustments that come in where, you know, you're talking about those $60 molds. We may cut one and it may not fit. And guess where that mold goes? Gone in the dumpster.
Yep.
And, you know, but that's something we do because if I sell it, that's my product. That's our name on it. And I don't want to get one back that says, hey, here's, you know, fit like crap.
Well, at that point, we can control our destiny all the way around. If they don't fit long term, which in manufacturing stuff can happen all the time. There's never going to be you're never going to send out 100,000 holsters and every one of them be perfect. Something can always happen. But when something happens, we can fix the issue with us doing our own molds compared to when we're using other molds. What do you do? you know, they're not making holsters off of them. They don't care.
And, you know, kind of, you know, like we call it like the old way of where it's a craftsman deal and you can have the best craftsman on earth and he's not going to ever cut two Glock 17 holsters the same with the same outline, the same jig, where now you can take our shells and stack up 50 of them and they look like poker chips stacked up and the holes are perfectly straight down, all the 100% same shape.
And the coolest part about it is we resisted going that route for a long ways because we didn't want our holsters to be like, if you look at a lot of holsters on the market without calling anybody out, there's a lot of them that look identical.
Right.
The reason for this is they are not making their own molds. They're buying molds from somebody and buying a trim jig from somebody. So they're not even in charge of their holsters. Yes, they're putting their name on it, but they're only going to fit as good as the guy using that same mold. Whereas us, there's nobody right, wrong, or indifferent. It's on us. If it's wrong, it's because we did it.
So they can, you know, wherever that optic cut is for it, that's what they're getting. Wherever the end of the muzzle is, they're getting, which another thing, you know, and kind of, you know, just, you know, going over the basics of why I think ours are better and, well, why I know ours are better than a lot of them. You know, the guy's buffing. It comes down to a simple act of buffing and taking the time to have that nice polished finish all the way around the outside where it doesn't drag on you. It's comfortable. It looks nice. The rounded edges, like on the end of the muzzle, we extend them all out where, you know, you don't have that sharp edge digging into the bottom when you sit down in your car. Avoiding corners on it, you know, rounding everything off. You know, I see tons of, like, maybe not 45 degree angles, but like on some of them that aren't optic
cut. They're pretty blocky.
They're pretty blocky, and it's a lot of extra plastic, and that all that extra plastic is just digging into you. It's more to be uncomfortable, more to get in the way, more weight.
Well, they're not buffing them because we know with labor and stuff, it doesn't seem like it would be, but the buffing and stuff takes more time than any of it.
It does.
It's the fine tuning of stuff compared to just brush it through and put screws through it.
Yeah, and I know the other reason, and our guys are great, and so this isn't a shot at our guys. I'm just speaking from managing people for a lot of years. I'm sure a lot of these other companies too, especially if you're trying to mass produce these things, you're not going to buff them because, you know, the number one issue when that CNC machine cuts it, those cuts and angles and corners are exactly how we want them. We tested them. You get the guy over there buffing. Well, he takes a corner off, and then he starts rounding them.
Yeah, he starts shaping them instead of buffing them.
Yeah, so we're not, you know, we're polishing them. We're not trying to recreate, you know, the wheel here.
I have a quick story that gives me a reason. It just, our holsters are different. And this one time, there's a gun show in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's one of the biggest in the country. I don't know if you two have ever been there or not. It's really close to about like the SHOT Show as far as size wise. It's four stories of barter halls of just nothing but
isn't
guns.
Isn't it like Wanamaker's or something?
Yeah,
something like that.
I can't speak to the name at all. It's been 3 years since I've been there, but it's pretty famous around the country for this gun show. And we're walking through this gun show and we're running because it's right at this like middle of COVID and certain guns, Remington just went out of business. There's certain guns that people are really just looking for, focusing on. And I wanted personal for like 870 shotguns. I was looking. So we were basically running through this gun show and something caught my eye. And there was this red holster sitting on a table with a pistol. And I knew instantly it was a Muddy River holster. And I had only been working here maybe 3 or 4 months at the time. This was years ago.
Yeah, I remember he sent me a text. He seen one.
And I seen it as I knew instantly it was our holster. And it's just the details that we add to those holsters, hand buffing, the round corners, the round edges, the beveled ends. Like we put a bevel on every holster to make it comfortable. And that's what a lot of these companies, like Kevin was saying, they use these molds that everybody else uses. Well, they don't care about comfort. They're just caring about selling their molds. We care about all of it. The details, not just customer service, like Kevin said yesterday, the comfort level of that holster as well. And it just stood out immediately as soon as I seen it laid on that table with all those pistols. Like, well, there's ours.
And at the end of the day, too, it's another accessory that you're carrying around, no different than your watch or your hat or your tattoo. You know, you don't want some blocky, you know, thing that looks like Buzz Lightyear should have it, you know.
Well, the truth is you should forget about that holster.
You should.
Yeah, once you wear it, you shouldn't even know you have it on. So that helps.
And the fact that all of our holsters are, we're making them all optic cut now. You know, some people might not have an optic, but that doesn't mean 6 months from now you're not going to buy one.
And the question we get all the time is, well, does it affect the fit if I don't have an optic? And no, it does not.
And we make them all with suppressor height sights and for threaded barrels. So anything you can do to your pistol, it's going to be covered. You know, whether you have it now or not, you know, your decisions change down the road. And, you know, and like I said, none of it affects any of the fitment, any of the retention, none of it. And I know you had a blog post about it, but the age old, you know, is Kydex going to scratch up my gun? You know, that was the, from my understanding, that came from the early days of Kydex where they didn't really know.
That's a whole, I mean, just give a brief. If you think about it, it was leather for years from cowboy guns, nothing but leather. When Kydex came around, there's leather makers, Galco Gun Leather, you know, some really big players that still make great holsters, not downplaying them at all. And I'm not saying it was them that were saying this stuff, but like local mom and shop holster, leather holster guys, the leather market is kind of trending out because it was generally speaking older people doing that. There's very few younger generation kids that are in leather work now. But when it first came out, they're freaking out because it's taking a big chunk of their market. You know, so they were like, well, there's no way, and they didn't know. So it's not like they are purposely sabotaging. And there's like, it's going to tear up your gun. And some of the Kydex did, because like what we talked about, they're using blue guns. They didn't know how to do it.
You don't have those rounded edges, so it may drag.
There's a reason why there's probably 7 or 8 top holster companies, but you can find 300 holster companies on the internet. There's a reason for that.
And it also depends on the finish on your gun. There's high-end companies that I've seen their finish scratch with barely doing anything to it. I mean, yeah, they'll take care of them and they help that customer out, but the next time they go to put that gun in another holster, it's going to scratch it just the same.
At the end of the day, if there's things you can do to a holster to make it not wear as much, but if you're going to actually use a pistol and train with a pistol, which you absolutely should if you're going to carry that pistol, if you think it's not going to get any wear on it, you might as well leave it in the safe.
Yeah.
Because you're going to end up very upset.
I carried a Springfield XDM, or no, not an XDM, the original Springfield XD9 was what I carried working armed security all the time. And yeah, just like you're talking about, that thing, the bluing has gone off both sides. Yeah. I mean, it's down to almost silver, but I shot it all the time. I mean, that spring's like perfect in there. And
well, it's really no different than leather. Leather wears just the same as Kydex.
I think leather wears worse because in a Kydex holster, once your gun's in there, it's not moving. In leather, it's always shifting back and forth. So kinda it's almost like a sandpaper.
Yeah.
In leather or Kydex, it doesn't matter which one. And that's the good thing about us doing the leather holsters too, is we can give you an unbiased opinion. There's good and bad on both of them. But the dirt, lint, debris in your holster is what's going to tear your gun up finish-wise more than anything, because it acts like a sandpaper texture in there that's just rubbing back and forth.
Which would lead, you know, to kind of a side point, and, you know, this isn't for this podcast, but, you know, the importance of cleaning your concealed gun, you know, because you are, I mean, just like your watch, if you take it off right now, there's going to be all sorts of sand and, you know, stuff in the band. And
there's all sorts of stuff to that. And like I said, that can be a whole nother thing on people training and what we suggest with guns. But yeah, don't carry a gun for 4 years, never clean it, never take the bullets out of the mag.
Do the springs wear out? Because I've heard the springs can get kind of sloppy.
Yeah,
in
they'll
the mag.
Compress. Yeah, you should at least once a year empty your mag. Sometimes you can even take the mags apart, stretch out the springs. There's maintenance you can do on guns for sure.
But the people that come in with guns, especially used guns, that they go, oh, I've carried it for 3 years and it looks like it just left the gun shop. You know they're doing themselves a disjustice right there. They've never shot that gun. They don't know if they can hit the damn wall with that gun.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, like we were talking about that Glock 26 earlier. Like, I haven't shot as many rounds as you, you know, because you shoot all the time. But when I was shooting all the time is when I shot that Glock 26, and I might as well have thrown the pistol at the target, you know, because I just could not hit what I wanted to.
And yeah, and it's all what you get used to. There's some guys that can shoot them great and some that can't. But what you shoot great, I might not shoot great, and vice versa. There's no one pistol for everybody. And that's the misconception of, oh, I shoot this pistol. So there's guys that come in and have shot pistols a lot, but buy a new gun, and they think just because they can shoot that other gun that they don't need to shoot this gun.
Yeah, me, for example, I love Glock. Glock's a great gun. I cannot shoot Glock to save my life. I mean, it's I'm terrible with it, and I don't know why. I've had every model I can think of, and I shoot them all, and I think it's the angle of the grip. It's a
grip angle, yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the way it is. So I shoot other guns better than, you know, some brands, but I'm not knocking Glock for that. That's on me, you know. So I gotta, that's why you have to test guns. If you can rent them, that's great. Maybe in the future we'll have that option, but it don't look like it anytime soon. So
do your training. If you're gonna carry it, at least, you know, be, I would just say, responsible enough to be familiar with that gun and, you know, train, know how it shoots, know how it handles, know what it feels like in your hand. If it's got a safety, know how to operate the safety and, you know, treat it like the, you know, responsibility that it is.
Yeah. Just don't be negligent in thinking that you're G.I. Joe and can save everybody and you have no clue if you can or not.
Right.
All right. If you can't clean it, you can always bring it into the gun shop.
I mean, in all honesty, I don't clean mine. I just take them to the gun shop and let him do it.
So here, real quick. So I like to put a funny story in here. So I know you've got a blooper reel somewhere. Tell me about when Brett installed that optic on your gun that
made. Oh, don't even put that on me.
Oh,
nope.
So what happened there?
Brett fixed it. I mean, does that count?
It was actually the Echelon.
Yeah.
Echelon, I think, when it first came out. So Brett was busy.
No way.
Acting busy anyways.
Okay. I believe
or
that.
I was in too big of a hurry to wait for Brett. Maybe.
Maybe.
That could possibly be part of it too. So it says to use these screws. So that's what I used. I ain't no damn gunsmith. I used the screws they said to use. I tightened it on there. No, I made it through about 3 mags and I got a blooper reel somewhere. The damn optic came off and whacked me right here and literally cut my forehead. He was at the house. You were in the pool.
Yeah, we were in the pool at the house.
Him and Tabby were swimming in the pool, and I'm down there doing a review on this gun. I call him, like, hey, you come down here, and I think he thought I shot my foot or something.
Yeah, he wouldn't tell me. He's like, hey, I just need your help. Come over here.
I couldn't find the damn optic, a brand new $400 optic's in the grass. The best blooper, though, was doing YouTube videos when Jake came in the room. So when I started YouTube videos, I was using like a green screen, doing all sorts of crap. You know, I'm not a video guy. They're still not great, but they've came a long way from what they were. So I spent like 4 hours working on this one video because I'd keep messing up somewhere, couldn't edit it out, whatever. So I'm like 20 minutes into this and I finally got it good. I'm in the back bedroom in our house. It's got the shop and then the back bedroom in the shop, not the house part.
Right.
I'm almost done. I mean, probably 45 seconds left. And Jake, this was probably a year ago, so he's 5, you know. He opens the door and just the look on his face and the camera peeks in. And I'm like, I just pause. So it already screws everything up. And I look at him, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? He goes, oh, sorry. Back
in the house. He just left.
So the funniest part of the blooper reel, though, and I'll try to find it and put it up there. I got it somewhere. But I literally stand there for like 20 seconds, like look like the most defeated guy ever in the camera, like scratching my head like, oh, shit. Now what do I do?
Like, well, there went 20 minutes down the drain.
Yeah, and I've already spent 4 hours. I mean, this is probably the 20th time I've tried to record this stupid video because I've only done like, I think it was the second or third video I ever did, so I had no idea what I was doing.
So now if we do that, you're able to kind of edit it out and just bebop along?
No, you just roll with the flow.
Roll with it. Yeah. Now, if I look stupider than I normally do, oh, well, it happens. But
all right, so any last minute, we're going to wrap up here pretty quick, but any tips on, you know, for people who may be going to SHOT Show in the future, what would you tell them to do? What would you not do?
I can tell you for us, when we go back to the SHOT Show, we will probably go next year. We'll probably go for the range day part of it, which is not the main show. It's the range day where you can shoot those. And they limit that to even more than they limit the SHOT Show. So we're going to go to that where we can actually shoot some of these guns and then do maybe one day at the show.
They also have the supplier show that we missed. Yes,
we missed the supplier show.
Now, is that the Belt Clips and Kydex companies? Yeah, and
all the companies that manufacture.
And a lot of the stuff we've, over the years, we buy stuff in bulk enough. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, we'd buy 1,000 belt clips at a time. Now we order 20,000 belt clips. So the more volume you go up, we go direct through a lot of stuff already. But there's some stuff we still don't have contacts to go direct through, which will help us, especially during the COVID times. Luckily, in the COVID times, we were a big enough player in the holster industry that we could get whatever we wanted. They would say, hey, we're not going to have this, but we're setting this much aside, more than you'll ever need, to make sure. So where we weren't lucky in the gun shop side, as far as doing that, we were on the holster side.
And we need to talk to those companies, because there's future plans that we need to address, you know, in the 100%. Holster industry. And we're going to need help with suppliers. I mean, that's for sure. So
we're always working on new things, different things. Next year, hopefully the focus and hopefully the podcast helps some of this. Gun shop side wise, we would like to sell some more stuff across the country to customers we already have. The issue with that is, like, just throwing Streamlight under the bus here because they're the first one I can think of. But, like, our cost on, like, a Streamlight light through our suppliers is the same cost you can get one on Amazon from.
And we can get free shipping.
Yeah.
So, it really...
We lose money to buy some of the stuff through our suppliers, which is crazy.
Well, and you'd be doing them a disservice because Amazon's going to have it there tomorrow by noon.
And that's what I'm saying. So they get free shipping plus same cost as we're getting. It's hard for a company to make any money at that. And I'm going to be honest. I always have been a very honest person, outspoken person. I'm going to let that customer know to go here, go there, whether it's hurting us a little bit or not. They're going to appreciate that for the future, hopefully. And that's one thing that we'd like to get fixed, is so if we have our own website or whatever avenue we go. Streamlight's
just the first of them. But, you know, all across the gun industry, that's how these people are selling guns and transferring guns and stuff like that. We have a huge loyal customer base already that I can already tell you 90% of them will buy from us over anybody else anyways because of the service they've already got. But we need these suppliers to treat us the same as they're treating the other people so that we can do that for our customers without hurting them.
Yeah. Well, I am super excited to see what this next year brings. I know we've got a lot of good products in the works. You know, we've got some actually new dual mag holsters that are coming out that we just prototyped out. And
the 9mm, double stack 9mm versions are on the website now.
Yeah, so check that out, MuddyRiverTactical.com. Please follow us on YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you. Go ahead and give us a like, subscribe, follow us, all that good stuff. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Spotify,
yes. So we are live. Our podcast will be on weekly. We're airing them on Thursdays. Is that what we're doing?
I think so, because I'm going to put... On, it's kind of weird. We're still learning the whole podcast thing. The video version of it is going to be on YouTube because that's where we can always put it. The video version, I think, is always going to be better because you guys can see what's going on.
Well, you get to see Dad Pitt over here in this mug. So,
Here we go. Here we go.
That's why your camera didn't work last time. That's why you're on the long view. Yeah. So
yeah, he put me on slow motion last time.
Kyle's camera was slow-mo on episode one, so he looked like he is going... not moving very fast, let's put it that way.
So he wanted me to look more like I do when I'm at work working, so he had me on like the super slow-mo so you guys wouldn't know the difference.
That's accurate, yeah.
So
yeah, pretty much.
It's kind of like, you know, they say when you're going to go get your driver's license, you go DMV, buzzed at the DMV, and then that way when the cop pulls you over and you're drunk, they look at your license and you look the same, so they just let you go.
But Spotify and all that's audio only, which they can listen to. If you're listening at work, you're probably not watching the video anyways, but if you want to watch the video, it's going to be on YouTube. YouTube will be Thursdays at 6 for sure.
Okay.
Spotify, I tried to schedule it yesterday for the first episode that's going today. I tried to schedule it for today and it just posted it. So I probably did something stupid, but Wednesday or Thursday it'll be on Spotify. But Thursdays at 6 on YouTube all the time.
Yeah, and for the people that made it this far, again, we thank you. We appreciate you more than you know. We do have a code for all you. You know, we're an hour and 6 minutes in, so thank you. MRT Podcast, like Mr. T, but MRT, Muddy River Tactical Podcast, will get you 10% off the website.
I'm going to switch it to 15 to help them out.
15, even better. You are the man. And you can get one of these sweet shirts. We got hoodies, same deal on the back. We got hats. We're working on doing some range bags, things like that. You can get yourself a sweet holster. You know, if you're got a loved one who may be into guns or needs a holster, we sell gift cards too. Anything you need. If you got questions, reach out, call us. People call all the time. We are here to help you guys. We appreciate everybody and all the support. And for now, we'll go ahead and wrap it up for this week. Thanks again to Quentin Cox for doing our music. We appreciate him. And again, thanks. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
See ya.